Now we're holding on page Lamed in Sota or Samachvav. We learned yesterday, Braisa that had mentioned a number of types of people that are Mavale Olam, they wear out and destroy the world. We had a Pesula Tzalyonis, so about an unmarried girl who makes a big show of davening a lot, or we talked about various other possibilities, Almona Shevavis, and the third one was Kotin Shalei Kol Aloi Chadoshim. The third one was Kotin Shalei Kol Aloi Chadoshim, literally means a premature child, a child whose months are not completed yet. So, what is my...
Is there examples of Purushas?
So these are all examples. So, Isha Purusha, well, the Mishnah mentioned Isha Purusha. So, the Brais had explained that it had gone into more detail that you have, for example, we said, Besula Tzalyonis, of an unmarried girl who makes a big show of davening and being fafrumt, and really she's using it as a cover for nefarious activities. And the same thing with an Almona Shevavis. We gave the example of Yuchni Basritivi, who pretended to be a tzadekis, who's davening for women who are in hard labor, and meanwhile she was secretly doing kishuf to cause them to be in difficult labor. I forgot to mention yesterday, actually, Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi that another meaning of Amona Shevavis is, for example, you have women who would read certain psukim in Chumash, like the ones, for example, where Leah tells Yaakov to come to her tent, where she's, so to speak, hired him with the Dudayim, and they make fun of such things is that the kind of thing the Torah should be talking about? So, yeah. Okay, so now the Gemara says, "My cotton shall kol olei chadoshim." What do we mean by saying a premature child, a child whose months have not been completed? So that means, so hochatagimu here in Bavel, they translated that it means zatamet chacham hamavayit v'raboisam. It means a tamet chacham who kicks against and rebels against his rebbeim. So in other words, he defies them and says, I don't have to listen to them. I can do whatever I want. I can set up my own yeshiva in opposition to them. For example, Eitz Yosef brings up an example, actually, Ian Yaakov rather brings up an example that it can also mean, for example, like he's looking forward to his Rebbe passing away so that now he can take over. We find something like that with Nodav and Avihu. The Gemara says that Nodav and Avihu were walking behind Moshe and Aaron and saying, one of these old men are going to pass away and we're going to be taking over. Which, by the way, I mean, for Nodav and Avihu, tzaddikim like that, it seems very gross for them to say such a thing. There is an explanation, actually, in one of the Mefarshim on the Medrash that says that, no, it's not really they're saying that. They're saying, you know, listen, we realize they're not going to live forever. One day we're going to have to take over. Are we really ready for it? So they're saying it in a positive way, but nevertheless, you know, it's still, what are you even talking about? You're rebbeim passing away. It's not an appropriate thing to think about. Anyway, so he says that a mevayit v'raboisav means something like that. Like he's looking forward to his rebbe passing away, so now he'll stand on his own 2 feet. Rashi points out, we're calling him Kotin Shalei Kol Aloi Chadoshim, literally means a child whose months have not been completed, in the sense that a person who does that, who rebels against the Rebbeim, then that causes his life to be shortened. It causes him to not live with, we see, with not even a view. So therefore, so we see that, so literally you can say that his months, the months that Hashem had originally planned that he would live, are not going to end up getting completed. So that's one explanation. Rav Abba Omer, Rav Abba, who was from Eretz Yisrael, gave a different explanation that Talmud shalehigia lahirah umoyre. It refers to a Talmud who's not yet at the level to be able to paskin Talmud Chacha, to be able to paskin in Halacha, and he goes and teaches and paskins Halacha anyway. So he's called a Kotin Shalei Kol Aloi Chadoshim in the sense, like you have a baby is supposed to spend a certain amount of time in the womb to be fully developed, and only then is it going to be a healthy, viable baby. And this person, he's not yet at the stage where he's supposed to be Moira Hiran, he already is, so he's like a premature baby. So in fact, the Omer of Abba, or Rav Abohu, Omer of Huna, Omer Rav, my dichtiv, what does it mean? A pasuk describes the danger and the harm that such a person causes. The pasuk says, "Ki rabim chalolim hipila." She has caused many, many corpses, many dead bodies. She's knocked down. She's killed many people. Va'asumim kol harugeha, and mighty are all of those who she's killed. In context, the pasuk is talking about an isha zona, which throughout Mishle, an isha zona is a metaphor for minus and apikorsus and various other anti-Torah ideologies that are often very seductive, and people get into them and they lose their connection with the Eibishter. But here the Gemara is going to douse in that's referring to people who don't use their abilities as Talmid Chachamim properly, and they also cause a lot of danger and a lot of harm. So, ki rabim halolim hipila, the first half of the pasuk, she's caused many corpses to fall, zeh tamid chacham shalegiyah, lahiro murder. This is like we're saying, a tamid chacham who's not yet at the stage where he should be teaching and pasuking in halacha, and he does so. So Rashi points out, it relates to what we said before. We just called him cotton shalakolole chadoshav, a premature baby. Well, the word hipila is related to the word nafel, which means a stillborn baby. So therefore, so there's a connection. In other words, the pasuk is hinting that such a person is like a stillborn baby, and he's causing other people to die beruchnius because he's teaching them halacha wrongly, and then they go and follow him, and then they get in trouble lamaila, and it's all his fault. So that's the first half. Vatsumim kol harugea, the second half of the pasuk, and mighty are those who she kills. Is the opposite. Zatamat chacham she gil lahira ve'enim moda. Is the other way around. Zatamat chacham who is of the age and the caliber to be paskening and teaching halacha, and he does not. So Rashi explains, Vatsumim in that case would be Meloshon Oitzim Einov. Like you have a person closes his eyes and doesn't pay attention to what's around him. So here you have this person. He should realize that there are people who really need his learning and his explanations, and he's not doing it because of false anivos or whatever the reason is, and therefore he's causing tremendous harm. That's Rashi's explanation. Marshall gives a different point as well. The word Aksumim also means mighty and powerful. Like we had earlier in the Masechta, where the Gemara had used a pasuk that mentioned the word Aksumim and referred it to Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov. So another meaning of it is that mighty people are that you have mighty important people who are capable of hara, and they end up not accomplishing what they're supposed to, and therefore they're killed and they're slain, and therefore the pasuk is referring to that as atsumim. They're mighty. They have the ability to be mighty in Torah, and they're not. So it's both. In other words, a person needs to know when they have the capability and do it, and on the other hand, know when they don't have that capability and hold themselves back. So the Gemara says, Va'ad kama, well, what age does a person have to be in order to be roi lohira? The answer is Ada Boim Shana, when he's 40 years old. That's according to Rashi, and Marashar explains, and we haven't picked up this. Ben Aboim Labina, when a person is 40 years old, then he has Bina, so then he's capable of teaching and paskening and Torah. Tosfos, on the other hand, learns that it means 40 years since he started learning, which obviously then he doesn't start learning at birth, so therefore we'll be talking about sometime later. Tosfos relates it to the point, the famous Gemara, that says that a person doesn't fully understand his Rebbe's mindset until 40 years have passed. Like Koi Inish, Adaita Dirabe, Adaboin Shnin, as Moshe tells the Jewish people, Nasan Hashem Lachem, Levodas, etc., Adar Yemazen, this is at the end of 40 years in the Midbar. Therefore, Tosfos says, by the same token over here, it has to be that he spent 40 years learning. Okay. So the Gemara asks, Aini, is that so? So you're telling me a person cannot be paskening and teaching and paskening halacha younger than that? But Rabba Oidi, we find that Rabba was teaching like that. Now, Rashi points out, Rabba, the Gemara tells us in a few places in Shas, lived to be only 40 years old. So, and he was a Rosh Hashiva for long before that. So obviously he was a Rosh Hashiva, and he was teaching Torah and paskening halacha long before he was 40 years old. So how does that work? And the answer is b'shovin. The answer is when they're equal. So Rashi says two possibilities. It means, first of all, if this younger Talmud Chacham, such as Rabba, is equal in Chochma to the greater people of the city, then he is allowed to be paskening in Halacha. So Rabba is at least of the caliber of the other Talmud Chacham, but Pumbedisa, and it's not greater, and therefore he's able to. The second possibility, Rashi says, it can also mean where there's nobody older than him. So we can say that in Rabba's times, there was no distinguished Talmud Chacham in Pumbedisa who was older than him, and therefore say, fine, he himself is in his 20s or 30s, but nevertheless, there's nobody else who's of his caliber who's older, and therefore he's allowed to. Tosfos also discusses that further, and says that it can be more, Tosfos says, more like the second explanation. If he's the greatest one in Chochmah, then even when he's at a younger age, then he could be teaching. Rabba was the greatest one in Chochmah in the city, and therefore he can be a Rosh Hashiva. In fact, we have Reb Shuda Goin tells us in his Igeres, and it's mentioned in a few places in Shas, actually, that Rabba was a Rosh Hashiva for 22 years, which, according to this, if you lived to 40, it would mean you became a Rosh Hashiva at 18 years old, like, as we find Rav Elazar ben Azariah. With that said, though, worth mentioning, the Sefer Kedoshim and Rishonim, Sefer on Jewish History, brings a variety of different proofs that, in fact, he says that there's proofs that Rabbah actually lived to considerably older than 40, and in fact that he lived to 60. The Gemara mentions in a few places that Abaya lived to 60, and on the surface it's contrasting with Rabbah, who lived to only 40, but Kedoshim and Rishonim explains that those Gemaras can also be construed to say that both of them lived to 60. So in that case, then it would mean that he became a Rosh Hashiva at 38, but still, that's less than 40. But again, the answer is B'shoven. The answer is that as long as there's nobody, as long as he's equal to, if not greater than, the other people, then he's entitled to be Paskin. Next. Piska, so now quoting further from the Mishnah. So the Mishnah had said another kind of person, another type of person who destroys the world is Umakas Prushim, beholder the wounds of Prushim. Now Prushim is like this. So you have in Halacha, we have Amei Oretz, we talked about yesterday, where you can't trust their Truma Vatara, you can't trust their Trumas and Maestras, and so forth. Then you have people who are careful with those things. In Gemara terminology, we usually call them Chaverim. Strictly speaking, Chaverim is usually used more narrowly to mean Tamar Chachamim, but in strictly speaking, it can mean anybody who's taken on himself to learn and keep these relevant halachas of Trumas and Maestras and then Tumah V'Tahara, for the most part, especially Tumah V'Tahara being fairly complex. A person who does that is in practice going to be a Tamar Chacham, but anyway. So sometimes in the Gemara you find, and in other writings from the period of the Mishnah and Gemara, you find the word parush used instead. So the word parush means parshut. You think about it, a chaver has to be careful not to touch the amei aretz because they and their clothing are tamei. So they have to be parush. They have to be separated. But over time, the word parush came to kind of had a negative meaning. The amei aretz looked at it as the tamei chachamim are being standoffish and like it's not a matter of halacha. It's a matter of that they're looking down on us. And you know, you find various things from that time. You find in Josephus' writing. You find in other things where they used it as kind of a derogatory term, and in the Gemara, a lot of times also you find the Tzedukim called the Chachamim Prushim, and you have other non-Torah-based people like that who call the Chachamim Prushim. So here the Gemara is saying that even we have to realize among the Frum Yidden, you have some who are putting on an act of being Prushim, and they're not really, and therefore we're mentioning that. So now the Mishnah mentioned Makas Prushim. So Tana Rabbanan Zion Prushim Haim. There are seven kinds of Prushim that deserve that derogatory name Parush, rather than calling them by the proper title Chaver, because each of them is being hypocritical or doing something. There's some kind of flaw in his Frumkeit. And they are as follows. Parush Shichmi, the Gemara is going to then define all of them, but first here's the list. Parush Shichmi, Parush Nikvi, Parush Kizoi, Parush Meducha, Parush Machai Vosi Vaesena, Parush Me'aba, Parush Me'ira. So let's go through them. Parush Shichmi, or Shechmi, means Zehoiz and Maisa Shechem, means somebody who acts like the people of Shechem. So what do we have? You have the whole story with Shechem, the person Shechem, kidnapping Dinah, and then he and the whole city going and accepting on themselves Bris Milah, and they're doing it only for ulterior motives. They want to share and take over in Yaakov's wealth. So therefore, Rashi explains that that's what it means. So the same way, you have a person who's doing Maisim, who's doing Mitzvah, but it's only for his anah, so people should honor him. He's not doing it the same shemayim. That's the first type of porush that we're talking about over here. Marshall also adds the point. Now, usually, in and of itself, as the Gemara is going to point out soon, it's not so bad to do mitzvah shaloi l'shma, mitzvah shaloi l'shma bal l'shma. But here, where it was already well known that he had already done a serious avera and violated dinah, and then is in fact chayiv misa for it for the kidnapping, and everybody in Shechem is chayiv misa, as the Rambam explains, because they didn't prevent him, and they have a mitzvah of dinim. So now when he's putting on a big show of how he and his whole city are doing bris milah, it's not the kind of thing where he's doing shaloi l'shma and eventually will come from Yadlashma. So that's the first kind. Parush Nikvi, the second kind. Nikvi, the word knockaf means to bang. So Zahmanakaf is Raglov. This is a person who bangs his feet as he walks. So Rashi describes he walks like with little mincing, shuffling steps, like to show how humble he is, like show off how humble he is. So he walks up to the tzadgudel, heel to toe, and therefore he's not picking up his feet like normal people do when they walk, and therefore he winds up banging his toes into rocks. So Maharsha brings another point in this regard as well. The Gemara tells us in Chulin that if a person is running to do a mitzvah and he stubs his toe and it bleeds, and then he runs again to do a mitzvah and again it bleeds, in other words, like he wasn't put off by the first time that he stubbed his toe, then that blood is considered like a korban ola, the Gemara says. So now this person is pretending like he's always running around to do mitzvahs and then going, in those days people wore sandals so you could see their toes. So he's always walking around over there with banged up toes to make it look like he's running to do a mitzvah and doing, like we're saying over here, this dam ola, and really he's just showing off and he's not actually doing that. Maharsha, by the way, points out with a number of these things, there is a difference. You know, you can have a genuine parush, with many of these things, you can have a person is genuinely doing L'Shem Shemayim. You can have, for example, a person is taka running around to do mitzvahs and banging his feet all the time. But here we're talking about where they're just doing it to show off what they're doing and not because they are not because they're genuinely holding over there. So that's that. Parush kizoi, the third one, kizoi, is so that's meloshin makiz, meloshin letting blood. Omer of Nachman Yitzchak zam makiz dam bakoslim. This refers to somebody who causes his blood to be let in walls. So Rashi explains, he pretends that he's making himself, he's closing his eyes so he shouldn't look at women when he's walking down the street. So he's banging into walls and banging his head and banging his head or other body parts and bleeding. So again, you can have a person who genuinely is taka keeping his eyes closed not to look at unsneistika sites, but here we're talking about ways not doing it genuinely, but rather just a show off like that.
Keep your eyes closed. Why can't you just look on the ground?
That'll be the next one, Parush Meducha. But the different people would do different kinds of things. Parush Meducha, the fourth one is Meducha, literally means a mortar, like the kind of thing that people use to grind up spices. So Omer Rav Rashila d'mishapa kimeducha means he walks around bent over like a meducha. Specifically, it actually says here the meducha means not the mortar itself, but rather the pestle, the thing that you use to bang on the spices or whatever to grind them up. It's usually the end of it is bent. The end of it is bent. So now he walks around with his head bent low. So again, Maharsha points out the fact is the Gemara does say elsewhere a person is supposed to walk with his head bent a little bit low. A person, the Gemara says in various places, a person should not walk b'koyma skufa with his head held high. It shows a lack of anivus before the Eibishter. But still, here we're talking about where he does it excessively. So the Rambam, for example, writes in the same similar vein in Hilchos Deos, a person shouldn't be walking around with his head held high like that. That's gaiva. He shouldn't be walking like the Gemara is saying over here with it really bent down excessively. He should be walking, the Rambam describes, like a person is walking along deep in thought, like a person is thinking of his business affairs or whatever. So he keeps his head tilted down a little bit. That's the kind of way a person should be walking. The next one is Porush Machay Vosi Va'asena. The next one is the Porush of what is my obligation and I will do it. So the Gemara asks, what's wrong with that? Homal Yusi, that's a very good thing. He's saying, I need to know what my obligations are, what does Hashem want from me, and I'll do it. What's the problem with that? Ela Dama Machay Vosi Tu Va'asena. There's a word you have to insert over there. He's saying, what yet is my obligation and I'll do it. In other words, like he shows off, like I've done everything already that I've done everything a Yid is supposed to be doing. What else is there that you can tell me that I haven't done? So like he's showing off and then pretending like he's such a complete tzaddik. So that's the next one. And then you have Porosh Me'ava, Porosh Me'yira. The next ones are from Ava or from Yira. So Ava, Rashi explains that he loves the skar of the mitzvahs rather than he loves the Eivishter. And Yira would mean he's afraid of punishment. Really, a person is supposed to be doing, when we have Ava and Yira, Ava would be Ava for Hashem, Kasher Tzivani Hashem. Hashem told me to do this and therefore I'm doing it. And as far as the skar, the skar will come, but that's not your motivation. That's the idea of doing Lashma. Yeah, the really high levels of it, like for example the Altareb expression, I don't want your Gan Eden, I don't want your Olam Haba, you'll know Dichalein, but even lower levels, you have throughout Tanya, you have various explanations of the different levels of Ava and Yira, for example. So now the Braisa was saying that the Ava and Yira, we're talking about a flawed Ava and a flawed Yira, are also among the ones that belong on this list. However, Omru le Abaya v'Rava l'Tana. However, Abaya and Rava told the Tana, as we learned yesterday, you have Tanoyim who would repeat Braises in the Beis Medrash, so that the Chacham could analyze them. So they told the Tana, Loitisi Porosh Me'ava Porosh Me'ira. Don't put those on the list. So either they're literally saying we have to change the Braisa, and it should say there are five types of Purushim, or they're saying, fine, you know, it does say seven, but nevertheless, Ava and Yira, Porosh Me'ava and Porosh Me'ira are not really in the same category. They're not as bad as the other ones. Da'amar Rav Yehuda, Da'amar Rav. As Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, La'olam yask on the Torah and mitzvahs, a person should always be occupied with doing Torah and mitzvahs, afa pi shaloi l'shma, even if he's doing it shaloi l'shma, even if he's doing it, for example, because he wants the reward or because of fear of punishment or whatever. Shemitah, shaloi l'shma, bal l'shma, from doing it shaloi l'shma, eventually he'll come to doing it l'shma, and therefore it's not so bad if right now he's a parosh me'ava or parosh me'ira. You have the explanation of Chassidus that mitoich means within the l'shalah l'shma, there's already l'shma, because the pnimius, he wants to do what the Eibishter wants. But anyway, so they're telling the Tana that these don't necessarily belong on that list. Okay. The Yerushalmi, by the way, Tosfos brings over here from the Yerushalmi that has a different definition. It brings the same braisa, but with slight variations, in particular the Meducha, instead the Yerushalmi has Mahan Choya, but it explains each of them much differently. The Parosh Shichni, the Yerushalmi says, means ton mitzvos al kisva. He's carrying around his mitzvahs on his shoulders. So, like, for example, he makes a big show of, like, he's carrying schach or his sukkah or other things like that on his shoulders and putting on a big show of what a frum yid he is. So in other words, here in our Gemara we're saying Shichmi, Meloshin Shechem, then Meloshin Shechem, the person or the city, the Yerushalmi is taking it Meloshin Shechem as in the shoulder. The Parosh Nikfi, the Yerushalmi takes it not here. Our Gemara took it Meloshin Nikuf, which means banging. The Yerushalmi takes it Meloshin like give me a break. So like he'll tell people, I'm very busy with mitzvahs, so give me a break for a minute. What we're doing, I have a mitzvah, I have to run, go and go do a mitzvah. But he's not doing it sincerely. He's doing it to show off. Porosh Kizoi, again, here we have it meant a makas dam b'ksolim, the Meloshin letting blood. The Yerushalmi rather takes it Meloshin metazes, which means to trade off. So like he'll do avedus and do mitzvahs and figure one cancels out, one can be traded off for the other. So like he's going to figure, in other words, like I did a mitzvah, now I have a credit by Hashem, now I can afford to do an aveda kind of thing. The Parosh Mahan Choya, so here again, in our Gemara we had Meducha, the Yerushalmi says Mahan Choya, so he shows off, he says, whatever, he shows off and he claims whatever it is, that whatever money that I have, I'm going to be using towards a mitzvah, I'm going to be using towards tzedakah. So he's claiming, for example, here I have work to do, and here I'm going to take off from it because I have a mitzvah to go and do. What's he doing? Showing off. He should just go and do his mitzvah without boasting about it. The next one was Machay Vosi Vasena. The Yerushalmi defines that it means similar to the Parosh Kizoi, but a little bit different. What particular Averas have I done? Let me now find a mitzvah that will make up for that Avera that I did. And then the Parosh Me'ava and Parosh Me'ira, the Yerushalmi says it means, so the Yerushalmi takes it to begin with, that the Ava, at least, is a very positive thing. The Ava is like the Ava of Avraham, the Yira, it explains it like the Yira of Eod, and those are actually positive things, so that fits well with what Abaya and Rava are saying over here, that even if the Ava and Yira are themselves flawed ones, it's still not so bad, and the Yerushalmi is taking it even further and saying that here the Yira and the Ava are talking about are very good things, actually. Okay. The Gemara continues. Amar of Nachum Yitzchok said, Nachum Yitzchok says further on this topic about people who show off and really are not the same inside and outside. Dimitamra mitamra, what's hidden is hidden. In other words, yeah, you have people that do things in hiding and nobody knows what they're doing, and therefore there's not a lot we can do about it. We have to leave it up to Hashem to deal with that. Megalia, what's revealed is revealed. In other words, that everything is still revealed in front of the Beis Din HaGadol, in front of the Beis Din Shamayla. Udmitamra, so even what's hidden, Beis Din Rabba, the great Beis Din, the Beis Din Shamayla, Lispara, will pay back Mehanu Dechofu Gundi from the people who cover themselves with a Gunda. A gunda, Rashi explains, is a talis. So they put on a talis and pretend like they're prushim and very fafrum to yidin, but they're in secret doing averus. Hashem knows the truth, and Hashem will cause them to be exposed. That's the point of Rashi. Maharsha gives a different explanation, brings from the Aruch that Gundi actually means not a talis, but rather black. And there is, by the way, in connection with that, with people putting on a talis, there's a medrash that tells a story, actually, of a guy comes to town and before Shabbos, and he needs somebody trustworthy to deposit his money with for safekeeping, and he sees a yid in shul with talis and tefillin, davening very sincerely, and he thinks this guy must be an honest, trustworthy guy. He puts leaves the money with him, and then after Shabbos, when he comes to collect it, the guy says, "I don't know what you're talking about." So then he turns to the Eibishter and he says, "You know, listen, the only reason I trusted him is because he's wearing your talis and your tefillin, so you need to help me out over here because I see that now I got taken in by a con man." Kitzur Amaisa, the Medrash tells how the Eibishter helped, gave him an idea how to expose this guy, and so sometimes you have people who put on an act like that. Anyway, Maharsha explains differently. A gunda, actually, Maharsha brings from the Aruch, means black clothing. Now, people in those times wouldn't regularly wear black clothing unless they were in mourning. Nowadays, you know, we have our kapotas and our suits and whatever are black, but back then, the more common thing was to wear white or colorful clothing. So, when a person is wearing black clothing, shows he's in avelus. So, for example, there's a story, Maharsha refers to a story in Bava Kamma where there's a guy named Elazar Ze'ira who's wearing black shoes and shoelaces, and when they ask him why you're doing that, he says, "I'm mourning for Yerushalayim," and it actually says over there, the police, the guards of the Reish Galusa put him in jail for that, because they said, "What do you think, you're so important to be showing off mourning for Yerushalayim? It's not just for anybody to go and show off like that until he demonstrates to them that he's a Talmid Chacham," and then they say, "Fine, in that case, then you've earned the right to do that." But we see, in other words, first of all, we see from that, in other words, we see that the Jewish police back then would enforce such things. You're going to be trying to show off that you're more frum than you really are, then you could end up in trouble with the law. But we also see that there were people who would do that, who would dress in such a way to show their avelos for the Beis Hamikdash. And so here you have a person who puts on that kind of clothing to pretend like he's doing that, and again, he's really nothing of the sort. So that's another explanation then. So you have these people who wear a gunda, but Hashem, and Hashem, the based in Shemaila, knows the truth, and they will be paid back for what they do. Eon Yaakov says another explanation of what Rav Nachman by Yitzchak is saying. Why does he need to mention what's hidden is hidden? Of course. What he means is, in other words, sometimes you have, fine, a person does Averis in secret. In a way, it's not so bad. At least nobody's going to learn from it. The Gemara elsewhere makes that point, that in a way, if a person is going to be doing Averis, in a way, there's a certain advantage to doing it in secret, because then it doesn't create a Chilul Hashem. On the other hand, if he does it more publicly, then you have to reveal it. You have to inform everybody, as in fact, the Gemara tells us in Yoma, Mefarsim of Sachanetim, Mepnei Chilul Hashem. We have to publicize the hypocrites like that because of Chilul Hashem, because otherwise some people know what they're doing. And therefore, and then people are going to learn from him, and people are going to think when he gets punished, those who don't know what he was doing are going to think that he was a tzaddik, and they're going to start questioning Hashem's judgment. So therefore, sort of Nachum Yitzchak is pointing out that point over here. There's a difference whether his averus are completely concealed or whether they're sort of starting to become not known. Okay. In this connection, the Gemara mentions another thing. Now we have you have the Chashminoim from the story of Hanukkah. Eventually they finally kicked the Greeks out of Eretz Yisrael altogether and established a kingship. Whether they were supposed to do that is a big question in itself. The Rambam speaks of their kingship positively, because Ramalchus Yisrael. On the other hand, the Ramban famously criticizes them for it in his Pirush on Parshas Vayichi, Amo Yosef Shevim Yehuda. They're Koyanim, they have no business taking the kingship. That's why they eventually got wiped out. Anyway, there were several generations of Hashmonoi rulers of Eretz Yisrael, and at one point they became Tzedukim. And you have famously Yanai HaMelech, who became a Tzeduki, and Rashi refers to Gemara and Kedushin over here, that he killed many of the Chachamim. So for many years he was at war with the Chachamim and with the Shomer Torah Mitzvahs. So now, before he died, Omer Yane Malka LeDevesu. So he says to his wife. His wife is the famous Queen Shlom Tzion. She, unlike her husband, was on the side of the Chachamim. Her brother was Shimon Ben Shattach. So now, actually, what happened was, when Yanai died, she actually took over the kingship. She's pretty much the only queen in Jewish history. But in practice, the Chachamim were basically the power behind the throne. So now, before he dies, he tells her, you're probably afraid that the Chachamim are going to want to take revenge on the family because of what I did to them all the years. So he tells her, Al tisyari lemina prushim, don't be afraid of the prushim, because they're not going to hold it against you, because they're tzaddikim, they're not going to treat you badly. You and your children didn't do anything wrong to them, I did, so they would hold it against me. In fact, Ab Kerekat, that actually the day that Yanai died is a Yom Tov in Megillas Tainis, but they're not going to hold it against you or our children because they didn't do anything wrong. You don't have to worry about those who are not Prushim either because they're the Tzukim and they're on my side, they're friends of mine, and they're not going to have anything bad against you either. Ella, so Yanai tells you, you know, you got to worry about, I mean, that Tzvuim Shadom in the Prushim. You have to worry about the hypocrites. Tzvuim literally means the painted ones. So like the ones who put on a paint and a show of being Frum, and they're anything but. Shema Seim, Kamaisa Zimri, they act like the way Zimri did, Omavakshim Schar Pinchas, and they're looking for a reward from Hashem like Pinchas. Now, of course, you have many examples in history of Tzadikim and Rishayim, but Marsha points out that's the point. In other words, so Zimri, now what Zimri did was in full public view. These people were talking about they do things secretly, but they pretend on the outside to be Prushim, and they want Schar like Pinchas, and they, when we're mentioning them, because they were the polar opposites, because Pinchas went and saw what Zimri was doing and then killed him, so therefore so we use those as like the examples of the of one extreme versus the other. So he's telling them that's the kind of thing that's the kind of thing that you have to worry about. The people who are not what they really seem, those who are not genuinely Prushim, those are the ones you need to worry about. And you need to keep them, and you need to keep them at bay. And in fact, yeah, so Josephus records in his histories, well, first of all, the Gemara tells us in Tainus that during her times, there was tremendous bracha in Eretz Yisrael, to the extent where even the Gemara says that the wheat kernels and everything else, all the crops were growing tremendously larger than usual, because there was such bracha in Eretz Yisrael. And Josephus mentions in his histories that basically they had 9 years of peace, where she's officially the queen, but in practice, the Chachamim are running the country. Arusa Perek Revi, by the way, I mean, Yanai himself, being from the family of the Kohenim Gdolim, he was born from the Hashmonaim, they're descended from Pinchas, so when he mentions Mavakshim Schar to Pinchas, then he has good reason to, he has another good reason to use that metaphor, Taka. Arusa Perek Revi, so it goes to talk about various cases where you have a woman who is in the position of a Sota, but for one reason or another, we don't give her the Mei Sota, and the result is, it was in the Rambam 3 Prokim a few days ago, that the result is she's also to her husband, because there's no, unless she drinks the Mei Sota, she can't become Mutter. So anyway, in the course of the discussion, the Gemara eventually gets into the question, what about the husband has done the Kinui? He warned her, don't be alone with this guy. And she was alone with him, and that starts the whole Sota process. Now, what happens if afterwards the husband wants to retract his kinui? Can he do that? So the Gemara gets into a discussion about that. So eventually it brings the following piece. Amar Rav Yoshia, Shloisha Dvarim Sochli Ze'ira Me'anshi Yerushalayim. Ze'ira, who was one of the men of Yerushalayim, told me the following three things. Number one, Baal Shemachal Kinuya Kinuya Mochal. Yes, if a husband revokes his kinui, then that's a valid revocation, and now therefore the whole Sota process doesn't continue because now because fine, then there's no kinui, and if there's no kinui, then the stira doesn't take effect, and there's no problem. The second thing the Ira said was the zokin mamri shirotsu based in limcha loy moichel loy. The second thing is that when you have a zokin mamri, so you have the case described in Parashas Shoftim and explained in more detail in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, you have the Beis Din HaGadol as pasuk in a certain case in Halacha, and then you have a distinguished Talmid Chacham who himself is capable of Hara, who disagrees with them and goes back to his town and paskins Halacha and for other people to continue doing the way he holds and not the way the Beis Din HaGadol holds, so he's considered a Zakin Mamre, and we have to give him Chenek. So Ze'ira had said, if the Beis Din should also Beis Din Lim Chaloi, if they want to be Moichel for him, fine, Moichel and Loi, they can be Moichel on their cupboard, and he's not treated like a Zakin Mamre. Then the third din, Ben Sora Ramoda, should also over be Imelim Chaloi. Then you have the Ben Sora Ramoda. The whole thing is brought about by he steals from his father, he uses it to buy meat and wine, and he eats and drinks in a gluttonous way. B'chol, you have all the details about it also in the Sefer Sanhedrin, and eventually he gets Malkus, and then if he does it again, then he's Chayiv Skila. So now, if his parents want to be Moichel him, then Ze'ira is saying Moichel and Loi, then they can be Moichel, and the whole thing of the Ben Sora Ramoda won't take place. However, Rabbi Yoshia continues, when I came to my colleagues in the south, these are, now you have in connection with Rabbi Akiva, we know that it's 24,000 Talmidim passed away during Sfira, and then afterwards he says he went and taught Torah to Rabbi Seinu Shabadorim, to our rabbis in the south of Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, and the rest of that, Rabbi Meir, the rest of that group. So that's the same, that's the Chavera Shabadorim over here. They're all colleagues of Rabbi Yoshia. So he says, when I came to discuss this with my colleagues in the south of Eretz Yisrael, Al-Bez Hoiduli, they agreed to me about two of them. Fine, the husband can be moichel on his kinui, and the parents can be moichel on the rebellious son. Valzok and Mamre lo Hoiduli, but they did not agree that with the based in, that they can be moichel on the Zok and Mamre, Kadesh Le'yubu, Machlokas B'Yisrael, so that Machlokas should not proliferate among the Jewish people. The whole point of the way the Torah sets up the system with various levels of Bate Dinim, and you have the highest is the Sanhedrin Agadol, is that any time there's Machlokas, you have a final court, you have a final place to go to, and they pass in the Halacha, and that's it, that becomes the Halacha, and nobody can argue about it. So for Zok and Mamre to be able to argue about it, and for them to be moichel, would defeat that whole purpose, and therefore they can't be moichel him. As much as it's important, Abayna explains over here, as much as it's important to give honor to a Talmid Chacham, it's much more important to have that the husband wants to be moichel on his suspicions on his wife. The parents want to be moichel on the chutzpah of their child. Then fine, it's only at most the harm is only to one particular family. But here it's gonna cause harm to the Jewish people. So therefore they have no choice but to cut him out. And that's Sakad Halacha. All right. Further on in this parak deals with the question. Suppose you have a woman who's not capable of having children. For example, you have an Iloinus whose body never physically matures, and she's not able to have children. Is she able to drink Mei Soita, or is she excluded? So part of the question is, because the Pasuk says that if she gets through it intact, the Nixa shall be cleansed of any Aveira, the Nizra Azara, and shall have children. So the question is, does that imply that she has to be fertile and capable of having children? So the Gemara gets into a discussion on that point, and in that connection, the Gemara brings the following braisa. Tanya, the nixa of Nizra Azara, the Pasuk says that she'll be cleansed, she's found to be innocent of any Aveira, she gets through the Meisota process, the Nizra Azara, and she'll have children. What does that mean? So Rabbi Akiva means that it means if until now she was barren, she will have children, she'll be remembered by Hashem, and she'll have children. Divrei Rabbi Akiva. So that's what Rabbi Akiva says. Omer lo Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Shmuel says in Cain, if that's so, yistatru kol ha'akoras v'yipoktu. Then any woman who doesn't have children and she really wants to have children, what's she going to do? She's going to seclude herself and she's going to end up having children. And she's not supposed to do that, because after all, it would be a matter of yichud. The fact is, it's also to do such a thing. You're going to tell me that because if you have one tzniyistic woman who doesn't want to do that, and she's not going to seclude herself, and therefore not trigger the whole sota process, ifsida, she's going to lose out. And in fact, the Gemara tells us in Brachas, by the way, that Chana, the mother of Shmuel, threatened to do that. She says to Hashem, if you give me a child, good, and if not, Eilech Ve'estativ, if Ne'el Konabayli, and I'm going to force the issue. And the Gemara mentions over there that actually that would only work, Taka, according to Rabbi Akiva's understanding of the Pasuk. If you follow Rabbi Shmuel's understanding of the Pasuk, then that would be an empty threat, because she's not necessarily going to have children anyway. And then the Gemara says, according to Rabbi Shmuel, we'd have to understand the Pasuk there differently. Anyway, so Rabbi Shmuel continues, in Kain Matamalem of Nizra Azara. So what does the Pasuk Nizra Azara come to teach us? Not that she's going to have children if she didn't before, but Shem Hoisi Yoledes Betzar, if until now she was giving birth with pain, Yoledes Berevach, then now she'll have children, it'll go much easier. Vim Hoisi Yoledes Nikavis, if until now she was having only girls, Yoledes Chorim, then now she'll have boys. Ktsorim, if she was until now having short children, Yoledes Aruchim, then instead she'll have tall children, which is better. The Gemara, in fact, says elsewhere that Hashem is proud of the fact that he created tall people. Shchorim, if until now she had dark complexion children, Yoledes Levonim, then now she'll have light complexion children who look nicer. So in other words, Rabbi Shmuel is saying that's what she stands to gain from doing this. Now, Tosfos points out that, now Tosfos asks the question, so then the same question that Rabbi Shmuel asks on Rabbi Akiva, you could ask him. So if you have a woman who until now has had a bunch of girls and she really wants to have a boy, then the same thing, she's going to go seclude herself, etc. So the Rishonim answer that that's not such a question. You know, to do something like that, to have that instead of that not just girls, but she should have boys, that not just dark complexion, she should have light complexion, etc. For that, she's not going to go through the whole process of the soita and the public humiliation and all of that. But to actually have children, which she hasn't had any at all, that may drive her to desperation to do that, and therefore Rabbi Shmuel says you can't say that that's what the pasuk is implying. Anyway, the point is, the Gemara makes the point, therefore, the Nixa of an Israel Zara is not telling us that the woman has to be someone who is otherwise physically capable of having children. It just teaches us these points, but in fact, for example, an Ilonis would be able to drink Mei Sota because she's not otherwise excluded from it. Okay? Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, Rosh Chodesh Sivan. Today is the day, Aleph Sivan is the day that the Jewish people came to Har Sinai, B'chodesh HaShlishi, B'yem HaZeh Bo Midbar Sinai, and the pasuk is V'yichan Shom Yisrael, the Jewish people camped there, and as we know, V'yichan is Loshen Yochid, meaning Ki Ishachad B'lei V'achad, as Rashi mentions over there. So therefore, so we have a special stress on Rosh Chodesh Sivan, on the Achdus of the Jewish people, by Matan Torah. And in fact, the Medrash says, based on that, that in Masechta Derech Eretz Zutta, Hashem says, good, now is the time I can give them in the Torah when they're V'achdus. So now where does this Achdus come? Where does this Achdus stem from? Because every Yid has a Yechida, Sheva Nefesh, and the Yechida is connected with the Torah Seishal Mashiach, with Pnimiyas HaTorah, which Pnimiyas HaTorah is the Yechida of Torah. The Rebbe explains at great length in Kuntres and Yonah Shal Torah Sechsidus, they have the four levels, the four regular levels of Torah, Pshat to them is Jerush and Soid, those correspond to the four levels of the Neshama, Nefesh, Ruachai, Neshama, and then you have Torah Sechsidus, which is Yechida. So, and then that was given in a hidden way, in a latent way in Matan Torah. At that point, Pnimiyas HaTorah wasn't revealed, but it's latent and it's implied in the Torah that was given B'goli then. So now we have in a similar vein there when every day we have a miniature Matan Torah. When we say, and we had just before that, we had said Birkas HaTorah. We said, Baruch HaTashem Noisen HaTorah. Where Noisen is in present tense, because every day Hashem is re-giving us the Torah. So all of this is a preparation for the Torah Chadoshim, Iti Tetzei of Mashiach, because as we know, Achak Eloi B'chol Yom Shiyavoi, so therefore Mashiach can be coming at any time, and so therefore we have this miniature Matan Torah every day, the Baruch HaNoisen HaTorah, and the Hareini Mekabel. So we have the two things, receiving the Torah and Avos Yisrael. Continuing on Halachas of Yom Tov, so you have birds. So you have, for example, pet birds or birds in your chotzer, and eventually you're going to eat them, and they're already members of the household, basically. So even, for example, they may go and then forage for their own food, but every day they come home. So those, you would be allowed to catch them, even outside the chotzer, and take them and shech them on Yom Tov. But otherwise, if it's not to eat them, then you can't. If they're not used to that kind of thing, that then you're not even allowed to catch them, even if they're in the house, unless the Alter Rebbe points out, if they're so confined that you could get them b'shchiya achas, one lunge, and you'll have them, so like they're in a cage or something, or like in a small coop, then fine. Anyway, you would be allowed to at night when they're sitting there, then you'd be able to take them. Be that as it may, you have to be careful on Erev Yom Tov to pick which ones you're going to shecht on Yom Tov, because otherwise you may find the one that you picked is scrawny, and therefore it comes out you carried it for no reason. Now, this is all when it's meant for eating, like a chicken that's meant to eventually be shechted. If you're using it for the eggs, then it would be muhtzah. The Alter Rebbe says that people are noyik to be meikel, but hamach matova el bracha. L'maisa, I'm not sure how much nowadays people shecht on Yom Tov anyhow, even people who know shchita. I think there is a concern that some posts can bring up, that there's much more of a likelihood nowadays that you may find chafis, and therefore that it will come out that it was for nothing. I'm not quite sure about that, but in practice, I'm not sure that we find often that people shecht on Yom Tov. Be that as it may, this is all as far as household birds or pets or whatnot. Meanwhile, you have like feral ones, like you have bird houses, for example, and they regularly come there every evening, but during the rest of the day, generally they fly around, so then you can't catch them, even you designated them Erev Yom Tov, but the small ones you could, there's only the problem of Muchtza, so therefore as long as you pre-designate them before Yom Tov is good. Okay. And then you have bands on their legs or whatever. So after you shecht them on Yom Tov, you'd be able to cut or burn that band off. And then also you have you're making a stuffed chicken, for example. Then you sew it closed. And at least they did back then. After you stuff it, so you're allowed to do that as well. You just have to make sure that the needle is threaded before Yom Tov. After that, you can also get rid of and burn the leftover thread. You could even cut it. The Alter Rebbe adds, although the minhag is to burn it. Okay.